Justin, that was great. Our meeting format calls for a guest speaker followed by an open discussion. Our guest speaker will share for between 30 and 45 minutes before calling on people to share. During the open discussion portion of the meeting, we ask that you keep your sharing to, let's call it 5 minutes or so, so that everyone has a chance to participate. It is now my great pleasure to introduce someone I consider to be a good friend, my friend Karen W. You're muted, Karen.
You missed the best part. My name is Karen, and I'm an alcoholic. I am also a very grateful alcoholic. And the first time I heard somebody say that, I thought, grateful? How can you be grateful? Well, I'm not grateful that I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful that I'm a recovered alcoholic and have the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, which brought me to a relationship with a higher power that guides my life today. Welcome to everybody. Glad you're here. Lots of men. Where were you? I'm not quite up to par tonight. I'm coming off of a second major surgery, so if I'm not quite as vibrant and delighted as I am most of the time, I apologize. But I hope that your higher power will enable you to put aside any prejudice or old ideas or any judgments of what you hear for maybe something that you haven't thought about before that your higher power wants you to hear tonight. So welcome. Welcome to everybody. I'm going to start with what it says in the big book, what it was like, what happened, and what it is like now, because it is a huge difference. I was born right after World War II, so I'm the baby boom cusps. I was raised mostly in foster homes and with relatives for the first 10 years of my life. And from day one, I can remember my mother saying that I had 3 strikes against me. If I'd been a boy, my father wouldn't have left, which he didn't. She did. But if I'd been a boy, the marriage would have been safe. I was breached and I was premature. So I grew up thinking, you know, everything was my fault, and wanting to find love and wanting to find acceptance and wanting to please people and being a chameleon. And I was not a drinker. My mother was an alcoholic. She was the typical alcoholic that you see in the movies, the raging. She was a barroom kind of gal. She danced on the tables at bars, and she'd do outrageous things. She was a beautiful woman, and attracted a lot of men and had a lot of affairs. And that affected how I thought about men and women and their relationships with each other. I went back to live with my mom when I was about 10 because I was a free babysitter for a 5-year-old sister. And continued to live with my mom, who was physically and emotionally and mentally abusive. And when I was 18, I left home, still not a drinker, not liking liquor, not liking it at all. And had 3 jobs, went through college, married my high school sweetheart, still wasn't drinking. We had wine once in a while. That wine didn't settle right with me. It soured in my stomach. And so after being married for 10 years and with him for 17 years, I had a child. We had the house. I had the job. I was an educator. Had put him through law school, and his law practice was becoming very successful. And I wasn't okay. It just wasn't okay. And so I decided what would make it right, because I had everything I thought I wanted. You know, I had the dream. And I decided that if I found another man, that would be the solution. So one morning he said to me, and I remember this like it was just yesterday, I think we should have another child. And I looked at him and I said, I want a divorce. And, you know, I thought he would know. I mean, after all, why didn't he know? And this is a pattern, as you'll see. So we divorced. In fact, he handled the divorce. And then I started dating. And then I started drinking. And I'll tell you, for me, drinking me. I'm 5'2", I have brown hair and brown eyes. Drinking made me 5'10", blonde, svelte, the desire of every person in the room, everything I thought I ever wanted to be. And the same, I didn't realize it, but the same pattern was, and it was fun. Drinking made me feel good, and it was fun, and I looked forward to it. And that lasted, I guess, for about 7 years. I met some wonderful, wonderful men. I was so blessed and didn't even know it. But they all wanted to get married, or they wanted to settle down. And it was like, where did you get that idea? Well, where do you think they got the idea? You know, they didn't make it up. That's what I projected because I wanted them to like me and I wanted to please them. But once I got to know them, they weren't everything I wanted them to be because no human being could fill that spiritual gap that I had, you know, inside of me. And after about 7 years, I started drinking more heavily. Now, I was the kind of drinker that I drank at home. I was what they call a closet drunk. And I drank at home because, number one, it was cheaper. Number two, I would never be an alcoholic like my mom. And number three, I always knew where I was when I woke up. And I would drink from Friday night when I got home to Sunday night about 1 or 2 in the morning, then get up and go to work. Well, this lasted for several years. I became more of a recluse. I was a liar. I was a cheater. I was a thief. I was a shoplifter because didn't you know that, first of all, you were charging too much for this product. Number two, I might not like it. And number three, I didn't have time to wait in line. Now, my drink of choice was brandy. And I loved brandy and seven. And, oh, I meant to get it down. I got, I don't know if y'all remember, but there was a 32-ounce, are you hearing me? A 32-ounce Bubba cup from 7-Eleven. And I still have it in my closet. Maybe I'll get it when we start the discussion. And that used to be what I drank in. And when I went to the doctor and I said, you know, I think mentally I'm not okay. I think I'm depressed. He said, well, do you drink? And I said, well, no, I only have one drink, you know, in the evening. What I didn't tell him is I would fill that Bubba jug with half brandy, half Diet 7-Up, and then when it would get halfway down, I'd fill it with more brandy. And then when it get halfway down, I'd fill it with more brandy. And I was the kind of drunk that I passed out. Now, I thought I was going to sleep, but I wasn't. I was passing out. My son was in high school and starting college and just was living at home part of that time and would tell me he thought I had a problem. But no, I don't have a problem. I just have depression because drinking wasn't a problem. And I look back and there's so many things that I can tell you about, but the one that cracks me up the most is, and if I offend you, I apologize, but this is true. I was bleeding from the rectum. And I thought, you know, I was in my 40s, and I thought, well, this is normal. I mean, I'm a woman, and we have hemorrhoids, and I just have to wear a pad. I bled so much. And I can remember being in the shower. This is disgusting, but this is the kind of alcoholic I was. I can remember being in the shower, and I had a ledge on the shower, and I was bleeding and throwing up at the same time, but that Bubba cup was right there in the shower next to me. And that's the way I drank. Now, my last drink, because I want to get to the steps, my last drink was on May 8th, 1998. And I remember that because everybody at work knew something was wrong, but they weren't quite sure what it was. I was real shaky. I couldn't sign things. I was still doing my job, at least I thought I was. Nobody was telling me I wasn't doing it right. I wasn't in the classroom anymore. I was director of a federally funded family literacy plan, so I could have days off, didn't need a substitute, so it really didn't show. And I can remember that last drunk, which lasted 9 days straight, because I started on Friday night. And then Monday came, and I called in sick, and I said I had a cold. And then I called in Wednesday, and I said, I think I have pneumonia. I won't be in today. And then I called in Friday, and all this time I'm drinking and continually. And I called in on Friday, and I said, well, I think I had a slight heart attack. And nobody said anything. But that Saturday, I had a woman administrator call me that I greatly admired, and she said, Karen, what's going on? And I said, oh, nothing. She says, you had a heart attack? Did you go to the doctor? And I said, no, I didn't need to go to the doctor. It was real minor. And she goes, well, okay, call me if you want to talk. Well, that did something to me. I know why today, but I didn't know then. So in a few minutes, I called her back, and I said, Lynn, and this is the first time I had ever admitted this. I said, I think I'm drinking too much. And that started my recovery, because she said, come in on Monday, we'll talk. Well, I went to an alcoholic advisor, and at that time, I don't know if they still have it, they have a little green sheet for 20 questions. And being the educator that I am, you know, I started at the top and I started reading, and I checked yes to just three of them, but there were like 19 of them that were yeses, and I lied. Got down to the bottom, and it says, if you answered more than three or four of these, you're probably an alcoholic. If you, and I go, oh, shit. So I was sent to AA. Now, that desire not to drink was taken away from me that afternoon that I talked to my friend Lynn. And I know today how that happened. It wasn't me. It wasn't me at all, because I was in the stages of dying and didn't even know it. Besides the fact that I'd been dying spiritually for a long time, I was starting to die physically. And so I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll tell you, with that experience for me, because I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. When I came into the rooms, I was 51. I'd been drinking for 19 years. And I thought, like, when my mom's day, it was just drugs that acted silly, and Alcoholics Anonymous were a bunch of people that got in a bar and talked about their drinking. And I walked into that first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I tell you, there were women sitting in that room. It was a women's meeting. And they were talking, and they were laughing, and there was a joviality about them. And immediately, I felt like, these are my people. This is my tribe. Now, I still remember that, and it's like there was a symphony band playing. There were flowers everywhere. There were balloon garlands all over the place. No, there weren't. This was a dark meeting room in a church that had these tables that had wood tops that were old as the hills and card table chairs. But to me, it was a happening, and women were sharing things that I had done, that I had vowed I would never say to anyone, let alone a room of other alcoholics. And that started my journey. I got very active in my first 10 years in a lot of service. Now, the obsession had been taken away, and my sponsor took me through the steps. She took them through me in a very general way. And I was involved in a lot of service, a lot of sponsorship. I was involved in service at the group level, at the area level, at the district office level, at the county level, doing H&I and all that stuff. And at 10 years of sobriety, I still felt like I wasn't whole. I wasn't all together, and that's what I want to share with you. And so I started attending this meeting of, we used to call them big book thumpers, and I prefer to call them big book enthusiasts, and that's what I think I am, a big book enthusiast. And I asked this gentleman who was the same age as my son to sponsor me. Oh, but before we do that, I want to go back to May 9th, my sobriety day. It was Mother's Day, and I invited asked my sister and my son to come over. And I was going to, they were both seated on the couch, and I was seated across from them in a chair. I now, get this picture. I had been drinking for nine days, but not that day, not that Sunday. I hadn't combed my hair, hadn't brushed my teeth, was in the same nightgown I'd been in. And I looked at them, and I said, I think I have a problem with alcohol. And my son got this look on his face that I interpreted as a blank look. And my heart went out, and I thought, I have lost him. The one, I call him my token child. I absolutely adore him and love him so much. And I thought, I have lost him. I will never have my son back again. And I'm streaming down tears, and so is my sister. And he looks at me, and he says, Mom, I am so proud of you. Now, the point is, unbeknownst to me, he had been going to Al-Anon for almost 5 years, and I didn't know it. I didn't know it. So let's go back to my sponsor, who was about the same age as my son. And we started through the book. We started on the first page, which is nothing, which is blank. The very first page of the big book is blank, which is how much I knew, nothing. And we started, and I'm going to go through the steps because that's so important to me. And one of the things I noticed is in my big book, there's not a comma, there's a dash. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, dash, that our lives had become unmanageable. And what I've been told, what the dash means is a further explanation of that powerlessness. Not only was I powerless over alcohol, I was powerless over people, places, things, ideas, anything that I'd ever had. And my sponsor took me through an exercise called the unmanageability. From page 52. And it showed me all the places that I had expected everybody and everything else to make me happy. And it wasn't going to happen. That I had no power to do that. And that took me into step two, which came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, I was an atheist agnostic. So how can I believe in a power all this 10 years? What I knew there was something because everybody else had it. But I still didn't have it, being an Alcoholics Anonymous. So he had me do an exercise, and it's in the book. It says, we looked at our idea of God. Well, how do I look at the idea of God? I have to write it down. So he had me write down all the words in the big book that refer to our higher power and any other words that I had. And I prayed before I did that to the set-aside prayer to have any ideas that I had before I admonished away. Some of them I didn't have an answer for. Nothing came to me. And I ended up, I think, with 37 different terms. And then when I finished, I put the words themselves aside, and I just read the definitions. And it became clear to me just reading these 37, 36 definitions of what my higher power was. And the reason I told you about my background is because the one definition that I still remember today for my higher power, for my God, was unconditional loving parent. Unconditional loving parent. And it just hit me. What my higher power was, what my concept was, even though it was only just a little tiny part, it was all I understood. And it was enough to take me into step three, that this power could restore me to sanity. And not just to sanity, but being the person that I was supposed to be, that I was born to be. And then I made a decision to turn my will over to the care of God. And I did the third step prayer. And the third step prayer is a protection prayer. It protects me until I get to prayers in the seventh step. Because, you know, there is no amen. So I knew I was protected by this higher power, whatever they were, whatever it was or whatever. And then I started in the searching and fearless. And I had done an inventory before, but I'd never done one as deep as this one. And I was anxious to do it at 10 years sober. I wanted recovery. I wanted what these people who were recovered and had this power in their life, I wanted it so badly that I was willing to be as honest and fearless as I could. There wasn't any fear. I didn't think about the rest of the steps. All I was doing is the four step. I wasn't thinking about 5, 6, 7, blah, blah, blah. All I was doing was the four step, as the book said. And then I got to admit God and myself, which means honesty, and another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs. Now, what's funny about this is I didn't realize at the time that my higher power already knew my character defects. And I had such an ego that even at this point, sometimes I thought, well, gosh, I bet God doesn't know that about me. You know, not, it's like, no, Karen, it's not about God. It's about you. And you telling someone else brings some humility into your life and also gives someone else the opportunity to say, Karen, that happened to me too. You're going to be okay. You're with the right people. And then, of course, I went home just like the book says after five. It says we immediately, something to that extent, we immediately went home and took the book down from the shelf. And so for me, 5, 6, and 7 came together. So I went home and I thought, I'm not going to spend an hour on this. I mean, it's not a problem. How am I going to take an hour? Because it says we spend about an hour. Well, when I went back through all my steps. And then I looked at the clock. It was right at just about an hour and all the considerations that my sponsor were getting. And then, of course, I humbly asked my higher power to remove these shortcomings. And there's something about that, that what I knew at that time and what I know today is sometimes what I think is a shortcoming isn't a shortcoming in God's eyes, because God can use it to enable me to be of service to other people. So I have to be real careful of what I think my shortcomings are and let my higher powers show me what those are. And then eight, I made a list of all persons we've harmed. We all know the stories about this and how ugly they are. And I wrote them all down, and I wrote I believe there's 11 or 12 steps to our amends process. And I wrote them all down, and I had three piles, just like they say, hey, I'm going to do these right away. Maybe I'll do these sometime in the future. And then that prayer pile, hell no, I'm never making that amends. And then I started to make direct amends. And I didn't have any that to do so would injure, you know, anybody else. My direct amends, I want to share just let's see what my time is. I want to share just two of them with you because I think they're so funny. I had stolen some pots and pans. I ordered some from a place called Gottstocks, which used to be in Fresno and Visalia. And I told them I never got them, because when I got them, it's like, nah, they're too expensive, you know. But I like them, so I'm going to keep them. And this had been a couple of years before, because I was a liar, a cheater, and a thief. And so I called Gottstocks, and I said, just as my sponsor had told me to say, I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I'm doing my night set, and I need to pay for these. And they go, oh, no, we took care of that years ago. We contacted FedEx, and they have insurance, and they paid for it. Okay, so what's the next indicated thing? I had to call FedEx. So then I called FedEx. Hi, my name is Karen Williams. I'm a recovered alcoholic doing my night step. Now, why I thought I had to tell them that, but the book says that that's what we should do if it's appropriate. And she said, oh, my God, no. She said, that was so long ago. You will mess up our books if you give us that money. That claim has been done. And I can remember, well, of course, because it's been several years now, and I still remember it. And I thought, what am I going to do? God, what am I going to do? I can't pay Gottstocks back. I can't pay the insurance company back. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And it took weeks and weeks and weeks. And finally it came to me. Some of you have already know what I should do, because maybe it comes to you a little bit simpler than me. And what I realized is I need to make a donation to a cause that God would want me to support. So I found this organization that dealt with mothers with small children who had been abused, that needed money for diapers and formula and that kind of stuff. So I go to their office and I give them the spiel. I said, and I'd like to give you this check for this money. And they go, oh, you're so wonderful. You're donating. Oh, this is so awesome. We're going to put you in our little book of contributors. And I go, no, 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 no. I said, you can't do that. You don't understand. This is an amends. And they go, oh, but we want to honor. And I said, no, I was wrong. I did something wrong. And this is the way I'm going to pay back for it. And so I ended up going to the local money order place, and I got a money order, and I took it back, and I paid them cash, because I thought, you know, it's like these people were just, most of them, when I made my amends, especially for the shoplifting, either wanted to know, how in the hell did you get that thrifty ice cream scooper? Nobody has stolen one of those from us before. To, I can't take this money because I'm the manager. And it's like, no, you need to take this money. I don't care if you give it to your kids. I don't care if you give it to your employers. I was astounded at how many people were amazed at our program of recovery. So without knowing it, I was a real demonstration of what we as human beings can do when we recover. So if they had an alcoholic in their life, maybe there was hope for them too. Made direct amends to my son. Of course, he listened. And the second year of my sobriety, I started to make amends to him again because I thought I needed to do it every year. And he said, Mom, he said, if you think you need to make an amends to me, you go ahead. But he said, as far as I'm concerned, your first amends was good enough for me. And, of course, that meant a lot to me. I was trying to think of another one that I can't quite remember. Maybe I'll come back to it. And today I continue to take personal inventory And when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it. And what I found out in this step, for anybody that's had this experience, was that, I'm checking my time here. If I don't do it promptly, then a day or 2 days or 3 days goes by, and I still have to make the amends, and it makes it even worse to go back longer. And I can remember this one time. I don't like waiting in lines. I don't know about you, but I'm notorious even today for finding the shortest line that ends up being the longest line in any store. And I get real agitated. Well, now, of course, I turn that time to just looking at other people and finding something nice I can say. And, like, it's God's time, not my time. And so I was really nasty to this cashier, just really, really nasty with her. And I left and went and sat in my car, and I thought, Karen, you owe her an amends. I've been sober a couple of years, and I thought that it wasn't right. So I went back in the store. I waited in her line, and I addressed her by her first name, and I said, I owe you an amends. I was wrong. I said, you didn't deserve to be treated that way. And I will never treat you like that again. And if it's okay with you, every time I come in the store, I will get in your line, and I will give you a smile and ask you how your day has been. She sort of laughed it out. But I continued to do that for the next 3 years. And the miracle of it was every time I walked in that store, because I was trying to go when she was on duty, the minute I walked in, she would get this great big smile on her face, and so would I. And where do we get that? Where does that happen, that people we don't even know react to us that way? 11, sought through prayer in meditation. I'm not real good about my nightly review. I do it consciously, but I don't do it written all the time. Prayer and meditation is a practice for me, as our program is. It talks about, spiritual progress. And what I know today, if I ever had a mantra, my mantra would be my spiritual I get a daily reprieve. I get a daily reprieve dependent upon my spiritual condition. And I still believe that today. And what I'd like to add is that I get to start my day at any time. Just because I wake up being a little bitchy doesn't mean I have to be bitchy for the whole day. I can pray and say, okay, get your act together, Karen. And that carrying out God's will. And so often what I find is I don't want to do God's will. It's not always convenient for me. And it's already, it doesn't always make me feel good. But I know when it's the right thing to do. I know when it isn't. I remember one of my first spiritual experiences or happenings, whatever you want to call them, synchronicities, coincidences, whatever, in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in the classroom, and I was real pissy about something. There was something they wanted me to do, and I'd been sober a while, but I didn't want to do it. It was wrong. And I was walking into the office, and all of a sudden, and I would hope this would happen to you sometime, time seemed to stop. It just, time stopped, place stopped, everything stopped. And the grandmothers and the grandfathers said to me, Karen, because when they want to get my attention, they always call me Karen. And that's when I know, oops. And they said, Karen, we didn't say you had to like it. We just said you had to do it. And I took my next step and I thought, time started again, space started again, and it was, you're right, I don't have to like it. I just have to do it because that's the direction I've been given. And there's such a sense of relief when I listen to those messages that my higher power gives to me. Step 12, having had a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening. That's what I got through the steps. I got a little one the first 10 years, and at 10 years, I got a huge one. I have a relationship with God today that when I listen and follow directions and observe that everything around me is of the Creator, I'm okay. I'm a part of it. I like to say, I'm a visual person, and you know how the ocean hits on the rocks and there's sprays of water, those little tiny dots of water, and then they go back. It's like, that's what I feel like I am. The ocean is God. The ocean is the spiritual world. And for just a little bit, I'm sprayed feet upon the rock, and I'm separate. And I don't understand why I'm separate, and I don't totally understand what I am, but I know in my core, I know deep down inside of me, I'm a part of that ocean, and I'm going to go back to that ocean when I'm finished being part of that spray. I sponsor. I have a sponsor. I have sisters that stand with me shoulder to shoulder in the program. Haven't been able to do a lot of H&I or community service in the last year, but we'll get back into it, hopefully the middle of this year. And the part that's so important to me is to practice these principles, the principles that are in the program, the principles in the steps, the principles in the traditions, the principles in the concepts, to practice these in all our affairs. 6 years ago, I had a home in Fresno, and my son was living in Berkeley. And had four kids, and my higher power said, you need to move up there to be of service. You know, you're the only grandparent that can do that. Hell no, I'm not doing that. It's like, oh, yes, you are. Put my house on the market. In 9 days, it was sold. In a month and a half, I was driving next to the van up to the Bay Area. Now, I sold a 2,400-square-foot home in Fresno. You know what Fresno's like, most of you, Visalia. It was in a historical district in Fresno, had been built in 1935, out of coincidence, had a beautiful backyard, a fountain, a garden, a dog yard, yada, yada, yada. I am now living in Richmond, you know, Richmond up in the Bay Area, in an 800-square-foot slab, I think it's 12 by 15, they all call it a yard up here, and a carport. And I got rid of 80% of what I owned. And I cannot tell you, I am more spiritually fit than I ever was before. And I get to be of service, not just to my son, but also to my grandkids. And they're 10, 13, 14, and 18. And the things I get to share with them and the things I get to say, they've never seen me drunk. They don't even know I was a drunk. I get to talk to them about, it doesn't matter what happens to you. What matters is how you react to it and what you do about it. You know, building those values in them without knocking them over the head with it, showing them what service looks like, being the grandma that has the secret candy in her car that the parents don't know about, you know, getting to go out for donuts and don't tell dad because he'll get mad. You know, all those things that I'm able to give to them. And the things that they say, I love you, grandma. When I leave them, they say, I love you, Grandma. And when there's a holiday or a card, they write the most beautiful things. And it's like, how did this drunk, how did this selfish, self-absorbed drunk get to be of service to her grandchildren and the people around me? I practice principles. I love give it forward. I love that concept. I go out and I sweep my neighbor's sidewalks just because we have a tree that drops a lot of things. I do things that people don't know about because it makes me feel good. And they think it's the gardeners. That's fine. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's a gift. And the one thing I can say to newcomers, because I know there's a lot of newcomers here, is that in giving this program back, people say, well, how can you do that? How can you listen to so many fifth steps? How can you work with so many people? And it's because, or how can you go to so many meetings? It's because so many times I'll say, oh, I don't want to do that. Oh, I don't have the time. I don't have the energy. I don't have the money. I don't want to do it because it's inconvenient for me. And I do it, and I get so much more out of it than I ever put into it. Remember, somebody told you that, because when I was a newcomer, I didn't believe that. I thought, no, I'm never going to be getting anything back. I get back so much more than I ever give. It is such a gift. I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love people that live the principles, practice the principles, and share that with other people. And I have to say, you know, Bill is one of those people. I've known him I don't know, close to two decades, I think, now, Bill. We don't see each other very often, but it's like whenever we do, it's like we've never been apart. And every year on my birthday, Bill Hatzman, for almost 20 years, has sent me a text or given me a phone call wishing me a happy birthday. Now, how in the heck does he have time to do that? I don't know. Because if he's doing it for me, how many other people is he doing it for? And I had one last thing I wanted to share, and now, of course, I can't remember. But if I do, I'll interrupt somebody and tell you about it. So I hope that made some sense or shared something with somebody, gave some hope to a newcomer. Because I'll tell you, if this can work for somebody like me that was one sick little sister, I it can work for everybody. And I just can't say enough about it. And it's working the principles and the values of the program. It's not just going to meetings. I am not a go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Maybe that'll work for you if you have too much time on your hand. But get a sponsor. Get a sponsor that works the steps the way the big book says and do those things. It's not scary. It's revealing. And what I know today is I cannot live on the spirituality I had yesterday. I can only live on the spirituality I have today. I heard somebody saying, I wish I'd made this up because I love it. They said, I can't take 8 aspirin on Sunday expecting them to still work on Thursday. And I love that analogy. So again, Bill, thank you so much for asking me to share. And I hope that somebody heard something that they needed to hear. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Karen. You're always such a pleasure. We are now going to be starting the discussion part of this meeting, and we would like to hear from as many different people as possible. We should have enough time for everyone to share for about 5 minutes or so, so don't feel like you're under the pinch here. I'm going to go ahead and turn the meeting back to Karen, where she can choose people to share their experience.
Okay, well, first of all, I would like to ask for some volunteers that would like to share, because there might be somebody that needs to say something to get off their chest. So I'd like to say, is there anyone who would like to share? Well, not necessarily like to share, but feels the movement to share.
I'm Ellie, I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to go ahead and share first because my boyfriend's going to be home from work here shortly, and then I would be weird and embarrassed if he's, like, in the room. So I better get it over with before he's home from work. Karen, thank you so much for your share. I even made some notes here because I really liked what you said, and I love that part when you talk about waiting in line, how you used to be so, you know, frustrated and everything, and now you call it God's time. I was like, oh, I have to write that down because that's a great idea, because who hasn't had that experience of, like, frustration? It's not going on my time schedule. I want to, you know, I got to be here, I got to be there, da-da-da, and that's life, man. It doesn't go on our schedule at all times. I mean, maybe 1% of the time, actually, it actually rolls out the way we see it's going to go. So it's like we have to adjust ourselves, and that's what I love about this program is that it's given me just every day it gives me little tidbits. As long as I'm engaged and I'm going to meetings and my, you know, my mind is open to suggestion and my ears are open to hear, I get little suggestions, little tidbits like you said about, and I'm like, oh my gosh. So next time I'm waiting in line, I can remember, oh, I'm on God's time. I mean, obviously it's not a brand new concept, but like putting it, you know, God's time, but like putting it in connection to something as simple as that. And then, of course, you can expand it to everything else too, like with the road rage or any other thing that you want to be frustrated with time and people, you know. Oh, this is an opportunity right here for me to acknowledge God's time. I loved your analogy of the ocean as well, because I hadn't really thought of it that way about, like, when you talked about kind of the spray on the rocks and then going back into the hole of the ocean again at some point. That was just really poetic and a beautiful analogy, and I really, really like that. I've been spending just some time alone here lately, I just realized that, you know, like, I'm not real good at doing the alone time stuff, really. I was thinking yesterday, that, you know, all in my 20s when I drank a lot, it was the same thing. It was like just like I didn't feel like I quite fit into the world, and I didn't really know how to just kind of be with myself. And so the alcohol just made me not care anymore. It really just helped me not care about my feelings about everything. And just, I look back at that time and like that, I basically used alcohol, like medication, you know, self-medicating to deal with life. And today, you know, we get to just feel our feelings, and then we get to, you know, if I remember, I'm just, you know, I'm not separate from my higher power, and I'm not separate from my fellow human beings on this path, and we're not really alone. We might be spending some time by ourselves, but it's like that alone thing is really up in my mind that separates me from others. And I, you know, it's just a lie that I believe, really. It's oftentimes, and if I don't catch it earlier, I can, it moves into kind of a depressive kind of thing. So that's kind of the reason I wanted to jump on this meeting tonight, because I really like hearing the speakers and to just a good reminder that I'm part of this thing and the way you spoke of just how much your life has changed and all the benefits you've had from being sober for so long, that, you know, I love hearing stories like that. Because I can forget sometimes, and it reminds me to be grateful. Thanks, Karen. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Ellie. Is Justin still on? I don't see Justin. Did he leave?
Yeah, no, he's making his way up. Here he comes.
Okay.
I'm Justin, I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Karen, for your story. It was really powerful. I really picked up on a lot of the things and related to what you were saying. I recently came back to Pine Recovery after extensive long-term sobriety of about 6 years, and had a bad relapse. And now I'm back here working on the steps again. Trying to get a foundation and rebuild. So really I'm just trying to soak in and hear as much from people like yourself that have a lot of wisdom and knowledge from working in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I just thank you very much, and thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Justin. What about Gary? Okay, maybe we'll come back to Gary when I see his mute. Gary, your mute sign is on.
Maybe I'm not alcoholic and good at it.
Welcome.
I'd like to say that I enjoyed everything that you talked about. And I had a lot of things to think about when you're talking about your, as you work the steps and, making amends, because, I have a similar situation, but I'm not sure how to address it. And I don't want to get myself in trouble or get anybody else in trouble. But, I took from somebody that, okay, I'll just say it anyways. Well, I took from somebody that, it's another recovery home. I used to live next to a recovery home. And I used to feed their addiction, and I didn't realize what I was doing. I thought I was making money. I used to take pride in it, and well, now my baby got taken away by CPS now, and I found myself desperate, and I ended up at the doorstep of Pine. And so now I started working the steps and going through them and hurting myself and found out what kind of person I was, and I realized that I was right there feeding the people I was feeding. I was damaging those people's lives, and the home is a home where there's girls at, and they have the kids. They're in the same thing, that they're in the same position that I'm in right now, and that my old lady's in right now. And she's trying to get our baby back, and she's trying to do her program. And now, and I don't live there no more, but I used to. And now I start wondering if she's gonna be able to stay away from that, or know how to defend herself against her addiction. It's a lot of stuff to think about, and all I could do is just sit here and keep working my step and keep on trying to be an example to her, because I'm her support system. And at times I kind of wonder if it's working for her. I think about it, and then I see people in here going through it, some people that are not ready for addiction. I mean, not ready to fight their addiction, or they don't even realize that they're still in their addiction, mentally, or their obsession's still there. So my girls often calls me and tells me that she wishes she was in Pine because she's seen a big change. I'm happy about that, but I also try to point out to her that I can't do it for her. She thinks that she knows God, but she don't know herself yet. That's how a lot of us are. All to the newcomers, it's real quick to think that they have it figured out just because you know English or you know the definitions or you have high vocabulary. But we don't even know ourselves, so you can't even start if you don't know yourself. So it's down on paper and you really see it for what it is. I took another step to get a better understanding of myself and my addiction. I got a recovery Bible now. I'm not sure exactly how to use it yet, but I'm praying to God to give me understanding. But I'm still taking it day by day. I thought I was a little bit ready. I extended it for another 30 days. I now got 20 days left, but you know, I might have to extend again. I'm not sure. But I know when it's time to go, then I'll know, or I'll pray that God will let me do some kind of sign. Might even end up where these guys over here end up kicking me out and tell me it's time to go. But whatever the case, I'm ready to do God's will. If it takes time, for my baby to come back, it only makes me a better parent, and my girl too. I proposed to her on Mother's Day. But the day before Mother's Day, I proposed to her. I showed up over there on Mother Heights doorstep, and the staff knew about it. She didn't know, and the staff pushed me outside, pushed me back. Told me, wait. If you're gonna do this, you can do this right. You're gonna get down on your knees. So she has a little ring that is a Serenity prayer ring. It's a ring that has Serenity prayer on this side. That's her wedding ring. Well, that's her engagement ring right now. Until we get out of this, we're trying to get this together. But for those of you that have a partner or a SO that's in the addiction or that is lost in the addiction or in recovery, be there to support them. Don't place any expectations on them. Because it might take time, it might take a month, it might not happen for a long time, but if you're going to be there, then be there and support each other. For now, just worry about yourself, work on yourself, get you to change your personal places and things, and start networking to have a support system so you can't go wrong. But that's all I got to say. My name is Brian Sosa. Thank you for being sure.
How about my new friend, Oren? Would you like to share?
Yes, I love you. First, I just want to thank my creator for another day of sobriety. With that being said, that was awesome, Sharon. That's one thing that kept me here in these rooms is hearing people share like you. There's a gracefulness that how you tell your story, and and the messages are strong in there, you know, like as long as I'm listening, you know, like not just with this, but with this, with my heart, you know. And that's one thing that I found in this program. Like you said something towards the end there about, like, I kind of do something similar in the morning, like, where I wake up and I surrender every morning. I have to. You know, I get on my knees and I surrender, and I ask my Creator to guide me through the day, you know. And without that, I would probably get in the way of myself, you know. My own self would get in the way if I didn't do that morning surrender and ask for His guidance. And, you know, like, I'm so grateful today for this program of recovery because, you know, like, I thought I knew a lot in life, and when I came into these rooms, you know, I found out I didn't know nothing. I didn't know nothing, you know, like, you know, my baby, look at my baby, she's right here, she's happy now, you know, like, there was a point in time when I was drinking where she wouldn't even come to me, you know, like, she wouldn't go jump on me in the morning and give me a hug, give me a kiss, say good morning, Dad, because she didn't know if Dad was going to be pissed off or grouchy until he gets a drink in him. You know, and then I'm able to play with her, and you know, like, and today I'm not passing time by hanging out with my kids. I'm spending time with them. You know, like before I noticed that I used to pass time with them. Like I would just hang around by them, and I wouldn't really engage too much. You know, and now that in this journey of sobriety, man, like it's given me a new life, you know, literally a new life. There's so many blessings. I'm 114 days sober today, you know, and these blessings have been coming left and right, and I haven't been seeking them. You know, they're just happening, and that's because I'm doing the work. You know, I'm looking back, you know, my program right now has taken me in a journey of self-reflection self-reflection pretty much. And I could look back on these dark times in my past, in my alcoholism, and I'm able to accept things for what they are. Like, you know, one of them being, excuse my language, but I was an asshole. I wasn't a good dad. You know, I wasn't a good companion. You know, and they are a big blow to my ego, you know, like, and to myself. But, you know, I'm not that person today, right now, in this moment. You know, like, again, the obsession of the mind, of drinking is gone today, you know, the obsession of the craving of the body is gone today, and that spiritual awareness is there today, you know, like, and that's all I can do is live it for today. I mean, that's one thing that they told me when I first got in these rooms, one day at a time, right, and I'm learning about that right there, you know, because being able to live in today allows me to live in the moment, you know. I can't live in the moment and think about next week, you know, because how am I going to be in the moment if I'm thinking about next week, you know, like, so I'm kind of getting that concept down one day at a time, you know, and I appreciate these rooms here. I want to give a shout-out to Bill Hassman, too. He's been a big part of my recovery without being directly involved, without, you know, like, doing a hands-on thing with me, but just seeing his how he is. Here in these rooms, you know, I got the privilege of seeing him at an in-person meeting also, you know, like, you guys are just such a blessing to have in my life today, you know, and I just want to say right now, I'm going to end it right here, but to everybody there in the recovery home, man, you guys keep pushing. It's not, I mean, there's going to be times where it gets rough, you know, but just allow those just to be moments, you know, just don't let it ruin your whole day. You know, you could push through that. I mean, we all have up and down days, I mean, up and down moments in my day. Before, one little moment used to piss my whole day off. You know, today I'm able to go outside, take a deep breath, reflect, pray if I have to. If that's what you do, pray. And you know what? He'll hear you. And you can get through the rest of your day with a smile on your face and joy in your heart. And I'm telling you that because that's my story. You know, that's how I do it today. You know, with that, I love you guys, and you guys have a good night, and I'm going to work for my next 24.
I think there's someone at Pine Recovery that wants to share.
Good. Hello, my name is Francisco, and I'm an alcoholic.
I love it so.
I just wanted to share that today I have been counting 34 days sober, I'm in my 50s, and this is the first time ever being sober like this, other than being incarcerated, and this feels great for me. You know what I mean? I mean, sobriety is just awesome, and I just wanted to share that and tell everybody thank you for your stories. They're inspirational, and you know what I mean? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, you got it. Keep them coming.
Yeah, I'm just here. My name is Jose. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm here because, you know, I'm really ready to change my life around, and, you know, and I put myself here, you know, despite, like, what I've done, and, you know, I'm here humble and ready to, like, follow the 12 steps and do what I came here for. You know, I have a burning desire to quit drinking, and I just want to say that. Thank you. All right, hey, I'm Christopher Stone. I'm from West Virginia. I've been struggling with addictions probably since I've been 12 years old. I got my first pills from my dad, you know, my first joint from my mom. Little redneck hippie kid in the woods. Yeah, it was no good. It escalated quickly. You know, I was hungry. Coal mine shut down. Narcotics flooded the streets, and I got kicked out of school and used my mind for thought I was doing good. I was eating. The first time I sold a prescription, I actually went to Wendy's and ate a meal and blew my money on food. Next thing I knew, I was getting weed and I was just a pothead. My grades started to slip. Moved into harder stuff, alcohol, college days. Didn't go to college, but I was living there for free. I think that's where my alcoholism really started. I was drinking every single day. You know, I always wore a smile on my face. Everybody thought I was so happy, so happy. And I was never happy. I would go home and I would just think, like, I would just go to bed. I would drink to go to sleep. I got to the point where I was drinking by myself, getting the Hennessy XO, Hennessy blah, blah, blah. Just drinking, and sometimes I was praying not to even wake up. And I would have people coming over telling me, you're a role model to so many people. And I would tell them, I'm no role model, so. I came to California to get to know my dad. Before I left home, I forgave my mom. I got to know my mom. I grew up in foster care, ward of the state, pretty much my whole life. Yeah, that really helped me, forgiving my mom. Getting to know my mom, because my mom actually called CPS on me and got me taken away from my grandma, so, like, I had, like, a big thing going on there. It was the crack era, so drugs run in my family, addiction runs in my family. Once I realized I had so many grudges, I realized I wasn't really this cold MF-er that I thought I was, you know? I started being able to love again, started being able to fill my heart. Once I had my daughter, that whole empty spot just, like, God healed me. I thought I would be done with my addiction. Truthfully, whenever my daughter came into this world, I always tell myself, you know, I'm also in Narcotics Anonymous because I slipped into, I think that was my karma for poisoning so many people. Growing up, but yeah,
and I just was fighting addiction for probably 3 years now. My longest term that I've been clean was a year, and I never thought I'd look back because I never knew these 12 steps, never knew to recognize my stress. I thought I was just boom on top of the world. Like, I beat that addiction. I beat this 7 years sober from opiates. I like, beat that, never looked back, thought, boom, I beat this one too. But I was a lie. I just picked up and, boom, drained my bank account, stopped working, just thinking it was okay because I was working. Really, I was just deteriorating my mind, my body, everything that I cared for. I had, like, acne from it, everything, just from ugly drugs. Yeah, I think I quit drinking once I used the bathroom in my dirty clothes. Okay, I'll tell you that. That's not funny. You'll put down the bottle after that one. But, yeah, I'm Christopher Stone. I'm 22 days sober this time, and I'm not looking back.
Thank you, Christopher. Randy, would you like to share? Randy Sosa, would you like to share? Okay, we'll come back to Randy. I think we have somebody from Pine Recovery.
You got to unmute.
Yes, you muted.
Okay, my name is Janoco. I'm at Pine Recovery, and I've been in this program for 37 days, and I just came out from jail right now, and I'm a alcoholic, and I've been struggling for quite a few years, and I come from a long background of my family that is a bunch of alcoholics, and my grandmother, my mother, and it was very hard for me as well, because I grew up and I've been seeing my family just been drinking, and then I got caught up in it, and I start doing the same things, and then I start going to jail a lot, and I start finding myself doing a lot of time in and out of jails, prisons, and now this is my third time I've been in recovery places, and I've been trying to find a way to surrender all the way to God, and I do believe there's a Lord, and I believe that I need to get right, you know, and thank you for letting me share.
Anyone else like to share?
Hello, my name is Jesse. I am 18 days sober today. This is the longest time that I've been sober in 10 years. I was even, I got in trouble with the law in 2014. I was placed on felony probation. I was still smoking weed. I was still, you know, doing opiates. I was still doing coke. You know, this is my first time in recovery, and I have never felt better. For the first time, I was able to hug my son sober. He's 12 years old, and that alone means a lot to me. And I'm really happy to be here, and I'm looking forward to the near future, to a better future. Thank you.
Anyone else like to share? What about you, Mr. Bill?
Well, thank you, Karen. And thank you for engaging our friends at Pine tonight. Hey, guys, I'm super glad that you guys are here with us tonight. I hope we'll see you more often. And before I forget about it, if there is someone there from Pine who's in a leadership role, if that person could stay after the meeting, I have a question I need to ask of you. Karen, thank you for joining us tonight. I was especially touched by the unexpected outcomes that you talked about. You know, the you talked about when you admitted to your son that you had a drinking problem and how you were convinced that that was going to end the relationship. And in fact, what it did was it opened up a whole new chapter in the relationship with your son. And you talked about your attempts to make a ninth step amends and a donation and how people responded to you in a very favorable way. When, you know, we all think that when we go to admit that we've done something wrong and shameful, that people are going to, you know, treat us the way we feel about it. Oftentimes it's been my experience that that I too have been surprised at the reactions that I get. Just to show you, I was paying attention. You also talked about going from being a drunk woman to a loved grandmother, and you talked about the impact that you've had on a cashier that. In a relationship that didn't start off well. I mention all those things because I too have had similar experiences. I'll share one. I was sober for about 8 months, and I lost the job that I was at my worst in. And so I'm kind of desperate to get another job. I have this interview with this guy, and I'm really nervous, right? Like, I'm hoping that he doesn't ask me anything about my past, right? But you know, generally in a job interview, they want to know about your past. They want to know what your experiences are, what your capabilities are, what you've done. And I was interviewing to become a financial advisor, and the question, I mean, when I think about it now, was a perfectly logical question, but it caught me off guard. What this guy asked me was, he said, tell me about an experience where people trust you with things that are valuable to them. And you know, my first thought was, holy crap, man. I'm just coming off being grounded, you know, banned from my grandmother's house for taking stuff that wasn't mine. I'm just coming off of this scenario with my sisters, for example, where because of my drinking and my propensity to get into a car after I've been drinking, they don't trust me with their kids, right? Because it wouldn't be safe. And the thing that occurred to me as I sat there trying to think on my feet with the answer, the thing that occurred out of nowhere was the reality that I've been invited back to my grandmother's house. And I've been invited, in fact, I've been entrusted with the custody of my sister's kids when they needed someone to help them out. They trust me today. And I, you know, Oren said a very complimentary thing about me, and I want to say thank you, Oren. And I want to turn that around and say the same thing about Karen and my friend Ellie. You know, I've known the two of you for a long time now. And there's just something about people that are talking about the way they're really living. When they're telling the truth about their experiences, it just grabs me. It gets my attention. And look, I did in that job interview, I did actually have to explain why it was important that my sister trusted me with her kids, the most important thing in her life. It was because, you know, I had been making poor decisions, and alcohol had taken a detrimental role in my life. And I was convinced that was going to be the end of the interview and I wouldn't get the job. And, you know, the crazy thing is, I got the freaking job, you know. I mean, I lost it a year later, but, hey, I got it, you know. What are you going to do about that? So it's just funny how things that simply cannot happen seem to happen in the rooms and in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do like to think that I have a front row seat at the God Show, because I just repeatedly see and hear things that happen that just cannot happen. And it's important for me to keep my seat, because I can very easily convince myself that things that are not true are true. I'll give you another silly little example. I asked my sponsor to guide me through the steps because I felt like I could use the benefit of his, experience that he could guide me to maybe be a closer version of the guy that I really want to be. And what my sponsor does with me is he gives me things to read and then things to write. And he asked me to answer these questions, and it's not terribly burdensome. It's not a difficult assignment, right? But he makes me think. And I don't know that it's happened one time yet when I didn't have this illusion in my head that after I had written the assignment and I'm preparing to present the information to him, I don't know that it's happened one time yet that I haven't thought that my answers were so enlightened that I was going to change his life with what I came up with, right? And, you know, the truth of the matter is, I haven't had an original idea. I haven't done anything that doesn't already have a name. I'm just not that remarkable. But the God that I've met in this program, which I still really don't understand, has shown, I'm going to say himself just for easy speech here. I don't know gender to God, but God has shown himself to be unlimited. So anyway, thank you for letting me share, and thank you for being here and sharing with us tonight, Karen. I appreciate that. And we might have time for a burning desire if there is one, but we are closely approaching the witching hour. Is there anyone that wants to chime in? I know we had a great bit of sharing tonight.
Hey, Bill, it's me, Anthony. I just want to share real quick, if I can. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober from last year. October 15th was my last drink of alcohol. And I just want to say thank you, everybody. And I know that our higher power does work. And we have close calls all the time. But you know what? When we put our faith in the Lord, you know, he'll see us through it. And he'll always make a way for us so we may endure whatever we have to go through. And I love him for that. And I thank all you guys for hearing you guys today. And having an open ear and remaining teachable. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Thank you, sir. And so I'm going to go ahead and give us some closing announcements here.